Hey, I said. I forgot I had something to do, Nico said, rocking back on his heels. But if you are going to stay, I'll figure it out.
Nah, Liam said, looking at me. I think we're done here.
All yours, I confirmed. But try to get some sleep, okay? Nico nodded absently. I lingered a moment more in the doorway, watching as he went to his station and the light from the monitor washed him in a blue-white glow. Liam tugged my hand toward the other hall, the stairs, the bunk rooms. I turned and tugged him in the opposite direction toward the senior quarters and Kate's empty room. The small smile on his face made me feel a little dizzy, the good kind of dizzy. One hand began to stroke down my spine softly, sparking an entirely different feeling low in my stomach. I stood on my toes, taking his face in my hands. Out of the corner of my eye, I saw a dark form come out of a nearby room, the little treatment room that had been set up. Liam turned toward it as the door squeaked shut, and the person, Chubbs, looked up, down, then back up again as his brain processed the moment.
"Oh, there you are,"
Liam said, clearly missing the way Chubbs's nostrils flared and his eyes went wide behind his glasses.
"We were wondering where you'd gotten off to."
"I was just building some shelves for the supplies and books in the medical, room,"
Chubbs said, glancing between us, the door, and back over his shoulder, literally looking for an escape route. "Did you build them all?" I asked, noticing for the first time that his shirt was buttoned incorrectly. I started toward the door, trying not to laugh as a look like death came over Chubbs's face. "We're happy to help you." Liam finally caught on, an eyebrow slowly arching up, up, up.
"Nope, no, I mean, I lost a screw and had to stop. Where were you going? I'll go with you."
"Are you okay?" Liam asked. "You're acting all twitchy."
"Fine, totally."
Chubbs pushed the glasses Vida had made for him up the bridge of his nose, then looked down at his shirt. Without warning, he snatched my arm and started pulling me down the hall.
"How are you? Are you guys okay now? Spare no details. We'll..."
The door creaked open behind us again. Chubbs shrank back against the wall as Vida came strolling out, her shoulders set back, head of must-purple hair held high. The curl of her swollen lips gave her a look of smug satisfaction. Liam stepped back, letting her by. Vida didn't say a thing. She simply dropped Chubbs's jacket over his head as she passed, letting it hang there. He waited until the sound of her boots against the tile had faded before sinking down onto the ground. Chubbs kept the jacket pressed to his face, looking for all the world like he was trying to suffocate himself.
"Oh, God,"
he groaned.
"She's going to kill me. Actually kill me."
"Wait,"
Liam began, not bothering to hide the grin on his face. I put a hand on his shoulder, afraid he'd start jumping up and down in total and complete glee.
"Are you?"
Chubbs finally lowered the jacket and, after a deep breath, nodded.
"Well,"
I thought, surprised at my lack of surprise.
"Well, well, well." "Wow. I mean, wow. I think my brain is going to start leaking out of my ears,"
Liam said, pressing the heels of his palms against his forehead.
"I'm so proud of you, Chubbsy. But I'm so confused. But I'm proud. But I think I need to lie down."
"How long has this been going on?" I asked. "You haven't... you're not..." One look of mortification told me everything I needed to know.
They had. They were.
Liam choked a bit at that.
"What?"
Chubbs demanded.
It's a perfectly normal human response to stressors. And it's winter, you know, and when you're sleeping in a car or tent, it can be freezing. Actually, you know what? It's none of your business."
"It is if you're being stupid about it,"
Liam said.
Excuse me, but I've known about contraception since I was...
Not what I meant,
Liam said quickly, holding up his hands. Not at all what I meant, but, good to know.
I crouched down in front of Chubbs, putting a hand on his arm. I think what he was trying to say was, if this doesn't pan out or one of you gets hurt, it'd be hard to take.
Oh, you mean like if she erased my memory, forcing me to keep a little fact sheet of who I am in case she does it again?
The minute it left his mouth, I could tell he wanted it back inside his head, where the thought belonged. That alone eased the sting.
Hey,
Liam warned. No, it's fair, I said. I know you can handle it. But Vi's been... Well, the people in her life really put her through the ringer. You'll be careful with her heart, right?
There are no hearts involved in this arrangement, he reassured me, which wasn't actually reassuring, let alone believable in any way. It's coping.
Okay, I said.
And she doesn't need anyone to protect her or fight her battles for her, got it? He added, looking between us.
The fierceness deflated somewhat.
God, she's going to kill me for blowing this. We haven't even been back for a week. You won't tell anyone, right?
That is the kind of person who doesn't give a rat's ass about what others think, Liam pointed out. A quality I greatly admire in her.
Are you saying she asks you to keep this quiet because she's embarrassed? I said. Embarrassed of being with you?
She didn't say it outright, but it's obvious, isn't it?
Maybe she just wants to keep it between the two of you for now because it's so new, I added, or because it really is no one else's business, even ours.
You're a great catch, buddy,
Liam finished.
It's not you, and she can't be that mad anyway, seeing as it's only the two of us who know, and we'd only ever tell each other. And maybe a G-rated version to Zoo. But, man, give yourself some credit. Obviously, you've got something she likes if she's jumping your bones.
Liam Michael Stewart, wordsmith and poet, Chubb said, shaking his head as he pushed himself up from the ground. I watched him as he fell silent, wringing his hands, trying our line of logic out. A shadow passed over his expression, one that had me wondering what he was thinking, or remembering. In the end, he shook his head.
I don't have delusions of grandeur about this stuff. I know who I am and who she is, and I know it's like putting an apple next to an onion. Whatever. We have an understanding.
Liam gave his shoulder a reassuring squeeze.
Anyway, good night.
Chubb said.
Don't stay up too late. You're leaving tomorrow morning, don't forget.
Liam waited until Chubbs had disappeared around the corner at the other end of the hall before turning to me, not even trying to hide his grin.
You wanna go build some shelves with me?
I held out my hand for him to take, leading him back down toward the right door. It was almost painful, I thought, to have a heart so swollen with gratitude and what must have been pure, untainted happiness. I wanted to live inside the feeling forever. If nothing else, this one thing, this one choice, wasn't made under pressure or fear or even desperation. It was something I wanted, to be as close to him as I could, with nothing standing between us. I wanted to show him the things that my words were too clumsy, too self-conscious to really convey. Neither of us were laughing now. The moment drew me closer to him, winding something up inside of me, making my heart feel weightless with anticipation. His eyes were dark, suddenly serious with the real question. I reached up and brushed an unruly lock of hair off his forehead before I tilted my face, brushing my lips softly against his, a question of my own. Liam let out a sweet, soft sigh and nodded. I pulled him inside the room and managed to tear myself away long enough to lock the door behind us and take a breath. Liam sat at the edge of the bed, his shape bright against the dark. He held out a hand and whispered,
Come here.
I swayed a little on my feet as I stepped into the circle of his waiting arms, watching his slow smile. I brushed the hair away from his face, knowing he was waiting for me. This whole time, from the moment we met, he'd been waiting for me to realize he'd known me all along, and he had never once wanted me to change.
The you that you were then, who you are now, who you'll be,
he began quietly, as if sensing my thoughts.
I love you. With my whole heart. My whole life, however long I'm lucky enough to get, nothing will change for me.
His voice sounded raw, flooded with the same searing feeling racing through me. The relief, the certainty, the overwhelming gratitude I felt that fate had given him to me, all burned my eyes, left me unable to speak again. So I kissed him, and told him that way, over and over again between breaths, as he moved over me, inside of me, until there was nothing in the world beyond us and the promise of forever. 20. The next morning, he woke me with a kiss, and then another, until the warm, lazy fog dispelled and I was forced back into reality. Liam pulled away with reluctance and reached for his clothes on the floor to start dressing. I watched him for a moment, amazed at how calm and peaceful I felt, like knowing he wanted and loved the whole me unconditionally had finally and fully brought the pieces of me back into alignment. He centered me so completely, and there was something so beautifully simple and straightforward in what I felt for him. Even something like this, something so important, had been simple for me. Finally, seeing his amused look as he turned around, I forced myself to get up too. I couldn't put off any longer the fact that he was leaving, but it didn't mean I didn't try as I caught him for one last long kiss at the door. Liam and I were the first ones to the tunnel's entrance that morning, even after he took a detour to grab food from the kitchen and shower. He had just gone back downstairs to say goodbye to Chubbs and the others when Cole appeared at my left, stepping out of Alban's old office. Just before the door shut, he caught it with his foot and held it open, looking around the room. His whole body seemed drawn with exhaustion, and there was a fresh cut on his left cheek. I pointed to the spot on his face. What happened here?
Ugh.
Cole rolled his eyes, gave a small laugh.
In a move straight out of Lee's playbook, I rolled over in bed this morning and hit the dresser. Already killing it this morning.
You actually slept? I asked. He turned toward me, and the answer was clear enough. I knew it had to happen, that he couldn't go much longer without telling his brother the truth, but having kept secrets myself, I still felt guilty for putting him in that position last night. Everything okay?
Everything's okay, he said. Felt better than I thought it would, to be honest. Liam's not the best litmus test, though. The kid would love the hell out of a one-eyed, three-legged, bald dog if it wagged its tail in his direction. Had to do my little trick for him a good 5 times before he believed I wasn't hiding a lighter in my palm.
Cole hefted a black duffel bag over his shoulder, its contents rattling ominously.
Have enough guns in there? Purely precautionary, he said with a wink.
It better be. This is surveillance, not an assault, remember?
Aw, Jim, don't worry.
Cole brought his free hand around the back of my skull, smoothing my hair down along its curve.
I'll have him back by tonight.
I pushed him away, rolling my eyes. I mean it. Please, just be careful.
You too, he said. Sorry to leave you to deal with the little prince again. If he acts up, don't be afraid to send him to bed without dinner. And double-check that the teams going to the water treatment facilities have everything they need before they head out.
Got it.
Harry said he'd try to check in tonight around 8. If we're not back by then, can you ask him to lock down another 5 pounds of C4?
Tell him I looked into hiring the buses to take everyone back east, and it's a no-go.
Got it, I said, already eager for Harry to get here at the end of the week, because it would mean finally seeing Kate.
Did you get the phone from Nico?
Alice couldn't bear to be parted from her fancy camera, even for this, and there wasn't time to get another one. Nico had programmed a cell phone to automatically upload the photographs they snapped of the building and send them back to us. Cole looked down at his watch, then over my head down the hall where the others had just appeared.
Taking his sweet-ass time this morning, isn't he?
Or someone's a little too impatient to get going, I pointed out.
Just ready, he said. Can we pick up the pace a little, sunshine? It looks like a cat threw you back up. Better than you. You look like you came out the other end.
Cole chuckled.
Got me there.
I grabbed Liam's arm as he passed me on his way to the tunnel door, kissing his cheek. See you later tonight. He stepped down into the tunnel, shouldering a backpack Cole had left for him there. When I turned to say goodbye to the other steward, he'd stooped, turned his cheek toward me, and was waiting. I flicked it with my finger, making him laugh again. You're impossible, I informed him.
It's all part of my charm, he said, shifting the heavy bag on his shoulder. Take care of things, boss.
Take care of him, I said pointedly. He gave one last mock salute before shutting the door to the tunnel. I waited until the sound of his and the others' steps faded completely before locking the door after him. For a moment, I was tempted to go back to sleep. Just showering and crashing for a few more hours sounded better than it had any right to. It already felt like a long day, and it had only just begun. At around 2 in the afternoon, I realized I was being followed. She never spoke, and she stayed well away, but Lillian Gray was there, observing from a safe distance. It made my skin crawl, the way her eyes were always assessing. Dr. Gray was there, watching the training through the windows of the gym, hovering outside of the computer room, leaving the kitchen just as I was coming in. It took me another 2 hours to realize that it was likely she was trying to work up the courage to ask me something. And even then, it was only because Alice pulled me aside after harassing the woman into a short interview and told me, point blank, she wants to see her kid. Seeing my expression, Alice added, look, I don't have any kids of my own, so I can't exactly give you insight as to how a woman's brain can get rewired to unconditionally love the same little dirtbag that scrambled her brains, but I have a feeling she'll be a lot warmer toward us if she gets her way. Did she give you anything you could actually use? I asked as we walked back toward the big room. She's a true politician's wife, Alice said ruefully. She talked for 2 hours and managed to say nothing useful. Any interest in sitting down with me for a chat, by the way? Not even a word about the president? I asked, turning the subject back to the matter at hand. That was what worried me most about this arrangement. Dr. Gray had made the arrangement with Alban to help Clancy, and she'd done it behind her husband's back. As far as we knew, they hadn't been in contact for years, but we had no sense of how she really felt toward the man. His name came up, and she shut down.
I think she'll talk. She'll give me the smoking gun on how long, exactly, the president has known about Agent Ambrosia, but not for free.
Is there any way?
No,
I said firmly. It's not a good idea. Clancy had been reasonably well-behaved up until now. I didn't want to tempt fate by even hinting his mother was nearby.
Liam would say yes.
Good thing he isn't here. Alice's look of irritation morphed into one of amusement.
You're the boss, lady. I'll figure out another way to get her talking before I leave tonight.
Are you all set for the trip?
We should be fine. Our water treatment facility isn't too far away. Otherwise, we would have left early this morning like the others.
I had no idea if Alice told the other woman that I was the roadblock, but it was about an hour later that Dr. Gray found me in the kitchen, slowly and reluctantly pulling together a meal for Clancy. One look at the rapidly depleting pantry stock had taken my mind off her until, like an unwanted chill, she stepped inside the kitchen and shut the door behind her. "If you've been following me in the hope that I'll slip up and reveal where he is, you're going to be disappointed. And," I added, "you're delaying his meal." Her mouth tightened into a flat, bloodless line. Everything about this family was cold and distant, wasn't it? With both this woman and her son, it felt like I was constantly walking on my toes, trying to keep my balance.
"He has a mild nut allergy," she said, nodding toward the open container of peanut butter I'd scraped clean. "And he doesn't like Granny Smith apples."
Instead of being touched by this demonstration of motherly concern, I felt my expression rearrange itself into one of total and complete exasperation. I actually bit my tongue to keep from saying, "He's lucky he gets any food at all."
"I suppose Miss Wells told you about my request, then?"
"Miss Wells? Oh, Alice." I cut the sandwich in half and turned to walk the knife over to the sink. She was still there, watching me expectantly, when I walked back over.
"Yes, she did. I'm surprised you even asked."
"Why?"
"Do I really have to remind you about what happened the last time he saw you?" I asked. "You're lucky you walked away with your life."
Finally, a crack appeared.
"Clancy would never kill me. He's not capable of it. I realize how deeply troubled he is, but it's because he was never able to get the emotional help he needed after he left that camp."
"Plenty of us went into those camps," I said. "Not all of us turned out like him."
Dr. Gray held my gaze a second too long for it to feel comfortable.
"Is that so?"
I felt myself straighten to my full height, ignoring the familiar stab of guilt.
"Yes," I said coldly.
She doesn't believe me. At all.
"You should know that I have always disagreed with the rehabilitation camp program, even before it turned into what it is today," Dr. Gray said. "I have never liked my husband's foreign policy, nor can I comprehend the extreme action he took in California. But if he were to give me the facility and materials I need to perform the procedure on my son, it wouldn't even be a decision. I would go back to him in a heartbeat. I would do that. For Clancy." I almost felt sorry for her.
The simple truth was that the camps didn't damage us all in the same way. If you spent your time there feeling small and terrified, once you stepped outside of the electric fence, you didn't just stand up tall one day and resume your old life, forgetting the desperation you'd had to make yourself invisible. If you spent your time there simmering in your own anger and helplessness, that rage carried over. You took it with you into your new life. It was disturbing to me how clearly I could see Clancy's point now. His mother really had no idea what they had done to him at Thurmond. How could someone who participated in, or at least viewed, the research conducted on the Psy Kids have no conception of the kind of pain or humiliation he went through?
"You realize that giving him the procedure won't fix him, right?" I asked.
"Not in the way that really matters to you."
"He won't be able to influence anyone," she insisted. "He'll come back to himself." The idea was too ridiculous to even laugh at.
"Taking away his ability wouldn't take away his desire to try to control others," I said, "and it sure as hell wouldn't cure him of being an asshole. It's just going to make him angrier than he already is, and hate you that much more."
"I know what's best for him," she said. "He needs the treatment, Ruby, and more than that, he needs his family. I just want to make sure that he's okay. It's not enough for me to hear he is. I need to see it. Please, just for a moment. I gave you everything that you wanted last night, didn't I?
Can't this be a show of good faith?
I was willing to give her that. So far, she had taken us at our word, and she had given us far more than even I'd expected. Alban, the sole person in the Children's League she'd known and trusted, wasn't around to tell her that it was okay to put her faith in us.
Nico's voice floated up to the back of my mind. They broke something in him.
Something fundamental. Maybe she needed to see it to understand it.
If I were to take you to see him, I began, you couldn't give him any indication that you were there, not a word. You'd have to do exactly what I tell you to. If he knows you're here, he'll stop cooperating and likely start figuring out how to escape. And you need to answer all of Alice's questions, for real this time.
I can do that, she said. I just want to see him, that he's been treated well and is strong enough to undergo the procedure. I don't need to touch him, just...
Is it the mother or the scientist in you who wants to see him? I wondered, unsure which was preferable. All right, I said, gathering his food and a water bottle up in my arms. Not a single word, and you stay exactly where I position you.
It didn't make sense to her until we reached the inner hallway that led to the room with the small cells. I shook my head, cutting off whatever question she was about to ask, and showed her where to stand to look through the door without Clancy being able to spot her through the small window there. For the first time in nearly a week, Clancy Gray looked up and met my gaze as I came in. The book he'd been reading remained limp in his lap until I walked the food over to the locked metal flap on the door and held it out, waiting for him to take it. He stood, taking care to stretch his shoulders before crossing the small cell. His dark hair was nearly long enough to be tied back with a rubber band, but he kept it neatly combed and parted. Clancy had 3 pairs of sweats he rotated through, and today clearly was a washing day because he silently bent and picked up the other 2 sets of clothing and passed them to me through the open hatch.
I didn't expect to see you, he said casually enough. Did he go to Sawtooth then? Did he really expect me to answer that?
No, obviously not.
How does it feel?
He asked, placing a hand flat against the glass.
To be on that side of things, to control the flow of information.
About as good as knowing you'll never experience it for yourself again?
It's incredible how things have turned out, he said. A year ago, you were still in that camp, still behind that fence. Now look at you.
Look at me. I am looking at you, I told him. And all I see is someone who wasted every chance they had to really make a difference for us.
But you understand now, don't you?
He asked, surprised.
You see why I made the choices I did. Everyone survives in their own way, when it really comes down to it. Would you have changed any of the decisions you made, good or bad? Would you have stayed in Thurmond, with the opportunity to escape within reach? Would you have gone straight to Virginia Beach, not let them convince you to try to find East River? Would you have sealed off the younger Stuart's memories? You've come such a long way. It'd be a shame for our friendship to end here.
I think there was a compliment buried in there somewhere. He snorted.
Just an observation? I wasn't sure you had it in you. I'd hoped, though.
Oh, really?
Didn't you ever ask yourself why I wanted you to come with me after East River was attacked? It wasn't because I liked you all that much.
Obviously not. You wanted me to show you how I messed with others' memories.
Well, that, but also because I was trying to gather people around me who could step up and help me build this future. Granted, I probably wouldn't have wasted time trying with this camp strategy. I would have taken us straight to the top. I still will.
If only you weren't trapped in this little glass cage, I said flatly.
If only.
Clancy smiled.
It'll be so easy to get rid of everyone now. If what Stewart, the elder Stewart, told me is true, you've badly hurt the government's credibility. I'll take it a step further. My father, his moronic advisors, the camp controllers. One by one, I'll tear their lives apart. The thing is, Ruby, you can stand at the head of those kids, and they'll listen.
They will, if for no other reason, because you're an orange, and it's the hierarchy of things.
But you can't bring the world to its knees the way I will.
The way you will, huh? I asked, knocking against the glass. When's that?
One corner of Clancy's lips turned up, and I felt a cold drip of something run down my spine. Ruby, this is your last chance to align with the right side of history, he said. I'm not going to offer again. We can leave now, and no one will get hurt. His gaze was as black and bottomless as it had always been, sucking me in, trying to drown me in the smooth, easy possibilities he presented.
Enjoy your time in your box, I said, and turned to go, holding his laundry out in front of me in distaste. One last thing, Clancy called.
I didn't look back, but it hardly mattered to him.
Hello, Mother.
I whipped the door to the hall open, but the woman was already gone, chased out by her son's laughter. That night I fell into a deep sleep, the kind that grips you by the ribcage and refuses to be shaken off easily. The voice in my dream, the same one that had been echoing somewhere behind me as I walked down the familiar path to cabin 27 at Thurmond, shifted from the deep baritone of a man to a loud, almost shrill call, this time from a woman.
Up! Ruby! Ruby, come on!
The lights in the room were on again, highlighting the ashen quality of Vida's face as it hovered over mine. She shook me again, violently, until I broke free from that last bit of disorienting sleep.
What happened?
5 minutes could have passed, or 5 hours, I couldn't tell. Zu hovered behind Vida, her cheeks already wet with tears. Fear ripped through me as I grabbed Vida's arm, feeling the way she trembled.
I was in the computer lab,
she began, the words pouring out of her. Was she shaking? Vida, shaking?
I was talking to Nico, watching the photos come in as Cole took them. Then it went quiet for about an hour. I had just left to go to bed, but then another photo came through, and Nico ran out to get me, and... Ruby!
What? Tell me what's going on. I tried to untangle myself from the sheet, my heart hammering in my chest like I'd just sprinted 10 miles.
All he kept saying was...
Vida swallowed.
He kept saying one thing. Stuart is dead.
21.
Liam or Cole?
The question, the same one I'd asked her 100 times, became more frantic as we made our way down the hall toward the computer room. The clock on the wall inside said it was 2 in the morning.
Vida!
I begged.
Liam or Cole?
They don't know,
she said, the same answer she'd given me the first 99 times I'd asked.
They can't tell from the photo.
I can.
The words were out before I could think about why it would be a terrible idea.
Let me see it. I can tell them apart.
I don't think so.
She caught my arm before I could go charging into the room. I barely felt the touch. My whole body had run ice cold. Panic made my thoughts disjointed. Bursts of terrifying images interlaced with thoughts of not him, not them, not now. I couldn't break the pattern. I couldn't catch my breath.
No!
That single word, a sharp bark from Chubbs, brought Vida up short.
Absolutely not. Take her back to the room and stay there.
There were a number of greens hovering outside the window.
Get lost!
Vida barked at them. And by the force of her voice alone, they did, scrambling to get away as she opened the computer room's door and thrust me inside.
What's going on? Did something happen?
Senator Cruz appeared in the hallway, Alice not far behind, her flaming red hair collected in a crooked ponytail, red marks from her pillow and sheets on her face.
Vida must have tried to explain to them, but I heard none of it. Nico looked like he'd been sick several times over, and the smell in the computer room seemed to align with that theory. He was drenched in sweat as I came toward him.
Do you really want to see?
This is a bad idea. Ruby, listen to me. You don't want to.
Chubbs's pitch got higher until it finally cracked. He leaned back against the wall, his face buried in his hands. Nico didn't move. His hands were limp in his lap, forcing me to reach over and click through the series of photos that had come through from the cell phone on Cole. There was a test shot in broad daylight, a distant mountain, Liam's back as he faced it, looking out into the distance. There were 36 of a low, squat building, all taken after sundown. He'd captured the PSFs posted outside, a ladder up to the building's roof, a sniper in position. If there was a fence around the camp, Cole and Liam were already inside of it when they'd started snapping the photos.
They're going in, Senator Cruz said. I thought they were supposed to stay outside.
They had gone inside. The images were fuzzy, lacking the brightness the full moon outside had provided. They were high up, looking down at tables below, the heads bent over them, eating. The kids wore dark red scrubs, the same uniforms we all had to wear in the camps. But the color, I hadn't seen that shade in years. The next image was of one of the kids in uniform looking up, eyes locking on the phone. My finger hesitated over the mouse before clicking again. Nico made a small noise at the back of his throat, his hand closing over mine.
Ruby, you don't want to.
I pressed my finger down.
There was a moment where my mind couldn't make sense of what it was seeing. The photos were taken inside of a dark room, the walls painted black, the lights lining the floors rather than the ceilings. The figure at the center of the room was slumped forward in a chair, the weight of his body straining against the restraints around his chest. Blonde hair fell over his face, masking it. My hand gripped the desk as I clicked forward again. A metallic taste flooded my mouth when I noticed the splatters of blood on his neck and ears. The angle made it impossible to tell. I needed another photo.
Click. Who took these photos?
Senator Cruz demanded, though no one seemed to be able to respond.
My guess is the people who caught...
Alice wasn't sure if it was a him or them. I pressed back against the question, focusing on the screen. Someone had hung a sheet of paper over his neck. Two words had been scrawled there in thick, uneven writing. Try again. In the corner of the shot was a sliver of deep red cloth, and even though my brain knew what was coming, knew it sure enough for the screaming to start inside of my head, I moved to the next photo. Fire. The image, the whole of it, was flooded with white flame. Fire. Fire. A screen of gray smoke and... Senator Cruz tore herself away from the computer, walking to the far corner of the room, trying to escape the sight of the charred remains.
Why? Why do it? Why?
The dispassionate, cold creature the Children's League had been careful to nurture in me clawed its way back up inside of me. And for a second, one single second, I was able to look at the burnt, mutilated corpse in the careful, distant way a scientist would have studied a specimen. In the small section of his face I could see, what skin remained was burnt, dark and rough, like a scab. I moved back through the shots of the fire. The sick assholes. Those goddamn sick fucks who took these pictures. I'd kill them. I knew where to find them. I would kill each and every one of them.
I held on to the cold fury with everything I had because it froze out the pain. It didn't let me shut down the way I wanted to. The burn of tears was at the back of my eyes, my throat, my chest.
I can't tell,
Chubb said, edging closer and closer to full-out hysteria.
Damn it!
I scanned through the earlier photos, my stomach as tight as a fist. If I started crying, the others wouldn't be able to stop. I had to focus. I had to. I stopped on the second photo of the figure in the chair, when they'd put the sign on him. His head lolled to the left, but I saw it. I hadn't imagined it. I knew who it was. It's... Vida leaned forward again. Her nails dug into my shoulder. I can't... Alice had spun away from the gruesome image, overcome by her own retching. But Nico? Nico was looking at me. I felt the words leave my throat, but I didn't hear them.
It's Cole.
What? Vida asked, looking between me and the screen again.
What did you say?
It's Cole.
A thousand needles flooded my veins, shooting toward my center. I doubled over against the desk, incapable of speech, of thoughts, of anything other than seeing the body. Cole's body. What they'd done to it. I sucked in a shallow breath, trying to push the pain down. I wanted the numb control back. My head was spiraling faster, harder than even my stomach, because I knew what would matter to Cole. I knew what he would be asking. Where is Liam? If Cole was...
Are you sure?
Chubbs asked when no one else seemed able to. Out of the corner of my vision, I saw Lillian come in and, for a heart-stopping moment, thought the blonde hair belonged to Kate, that somehow she and Harry were already here. I heard the murmured explanation Senator Cruz gave.
Harry, we have to tell him. And Kate, God, Kate.
I will, Vida said, her voice as tight in her throat as Chubbs's arm was around her shoulder.
I'll do it.
Is Liam...
Chubbs began.
Is there... Can we check to see if they took him into custody? If there's some update to the networks?
If he'd been killed and they positively ID'd him, then they would update his profile in the PSF network and remove him from the skip tracer listings to reflect as much.
I'm trying to get into the PSF network, Nico said. I'm trying. It'll be faster to go in through the skip tracers. Can you give me your login information?
Here, I'll put it in, Chubb said.
Is the phone still on? I heard myself ask as I was drawn back away from the computer, still in my chair. I didn't trust my legs to try standing.
Are we going to get more pictures?
And we would just have to sit there. Sit and do nothing other than wait for them to come. I choked on my own rage.
Reds?
Dr. Gray repeated.
You're sure? Can I see the photos, please?
Nico pulled up the screen again and shifted to the computer next to him to work. Dr. Gray moved through the photos, skipping around until she found what she was looking for. The violence and horror of it registered only in her frown.
He was dead when it happened, she said. He would have bled out almost instantly from the gunshot to his neck.
I could have told her that. Cole would have fought to the death. He wouldn't have let them take him into their program. He would have fought until he flamed out completely.
She shook her head, turning to look at me. This is why. This is why we need the procedure. These children shouldn't be able to do this and harm themselves and others.
My anger blew up, swallowing me in a cloud of blistering incredulity. No, this is why no one should be fucking with our heads in the first place.
There's nothing on the network, Chubb said. Not yet. Any changes to the PSFs would take an hour or two to feed into the skip tracer network.
We... Let's give him some time. He might still be trying to get away.
Vida shook her head, raking her hands back through her hair. The last photo came an hour ago. They would have sent something else if they had Liam, right?
Senator Cruz looked over at me. Where's the phone that he's been using to contact his father? I'll make the call.
Upstairs. The office.
Nico stood up so suddenly that he knocked his chair over behind him.
I'll get it. I need to...
Get out of this room? My mind finished. Away from the pictures. He returned less than a minute later, his chest heaving as he tried to catch his breath. He held the small silver flip phone out to the senator, only to drop it when the screen lit up and it began vibrating. For a moment, no one moved. The phone rang. It rang. It rang. It rang. Chubbs lunged for it, scooping it off of the floor before it rang out completely.
Hello?
His whole body sagged in relief.
Lee? Hey! Hey, Liam, where are you? You have to...
Senator Cruz was beside him before even I was, ripping the phone out of his grip and silencing his protests with a wave of her hand as she put the phone on speaker.
Took him. I couldn't do anything. I couldn't...
That voice I knew as intimately as my own, the one I'd heard laughing, pitched in fear, furious, flirting shamelessly, wasn't the one coming through the small phone. I almost didn't recognize it at all. The connection made him sound distant at the other end of a highway, beyond our reach. The words came out of his chest so ragged, so raw, it was almost unbearable to listen to him. Liam, it's Senator Cruz. I need you to take a deep breath, and before anything else, let me know you're safe.
I didn't. I don't know if this is okay. This was the only number I could remember. I know it's not secure. Not really.
You did exactly the right thing, Senator Cruz said, her voice soothing. Where are you calling from?
A payphone.
Vida stepped up beside me, eyes sliding my way. I couldn't speak. An unnatural numbness settled at the center of my chest. I couldn't say a single word.
I couldn't get him out. We got inside. We were taking pictures. One of them saw us and we couldn't get away. They shot him. He fell down and I couldn't get him out. I tried to carry him, but they saw us and opened fire. I didn't want to leave. I had to. Have you heard anything about it on the news? Would Harry be able to find out where they're keeping him? There was so much blood.
He didn't know. I looked at Chubbs. He looked like he had glanced up and seen a speeding car coming straight for him. I took the phone from the senator, switching it off speakerphone.
He... Liam? I choked out. He didn't make it. They sent us proof.
Until that moment, I think shock and panic for news about Liam had shut off the part of myself that would have let me think through specifics of what had happened. If Cole had been alive when they brought the Red in, if he knew what was going on, if he had been afraid, if he felt the pain. But something shattered in me at delivering the news, the flimsy door keeping the pain out bowed in and then exploded into a shower of splinters that cut through every part of me. I couldn't breathe. I had to press my hand against my mouth to keep from sobbing. My friend. Cole.
How could this? Why did it have to be like this? After everything, why did it have to end like this? We were going to do something. For the first time, he had a real future.
Chubbs stepped forward, reaching for the phone, but I tore it away from him, twisting out of his reach. I felt wild with anger and pain, like someone had thrown acid on my skin. I had to keep this connection to Liam. I had to stay with him. This would destroy him, the agony of knowing that was as sharp as the loss itself. I couldn't lose Liam, too.
What do you mean, proof? What did they do to him?
Any coherency was gone. Liam broke down with each word until he was sobbing.
I couldn't get him out.
No, I said, voice hoarse.
Of course you couldn't. There was no way, and he wouldn't have wanted you to try if it meant they got you too. Liam? It doesn't. It doesn't feel this way now, but you did the right thing.
The sound of him crying finally did me in, too. My grip on the phone relaxed as my hand lost feeling, allowing Chubbs to finally pry the phone away from me.
Buddy? Buddy, I know. I'm so sorry. Can you make it back here? Do you need us to come get you?
He smoothed his hand back over his hair, squeezing his eyes shut.
Okay. I want you to tell me everything, but you have to do it in person. You have to let us take care of you. Slow down. It's okay.
Chubbs cast a helpless look my way. I held up my hand for the phone.
I'm not coming back. I can't.
I interrupted him. Liam, listen to me. I'm going to come get you, but you have to tell me where you are. Are you hurt?
Ruby.
He sucked in a harsh breath. I could imagine him then, exactly as he must have been, still in his op blacks, his left forearm braced against the payphone's aluminum shell, his face flushed and wild. It broke my heart all over again. I gripped the phone so tightly I heard its cheap plastic shell creak. Spinning so I was facing the corner and not the gallery of faces looking at me, I dropped to a crouch in the far corner of the room.
It's going to be okay. It's not okay,
he shouted.
Stop saying that. It's not. I'm not coming back. I have to tell Harry and Mom. Oh, God. Mom.
Please let me come get you, I begged.
I can't come back there, to you guys.
The feeling of nausea that had been growing, twisting my stomach, rose like a cresting wave. His voice seemed to click in and out.
The line is cutting off. I don't have any more money. Liam, can you hear me?
Panic hit me like a swarm of wasps in my head.
I knew this would happen. Damn it. You. Sorry. Ruby. Sorry.
I don't know when or how she'd managed to slip by so many people, or if she'd made herself so small and silent she'd been here the entire time without me noticing. Zoo. She took the cell phone away. I tried to get it back, but she had it to her ear, and she was saying over and over again, in a voice as sweet as little bells,
Don't leave. Please don't leave. Come back, please.
I heard the dial tone. I heard that sound, saw the phone slide out of her fingers, and I knew it was over. Chubbs reached for her, and she clung to him, burying her face against his shoulder.
Come on, let's get some water, some air, some thing.
I want to go out and find him, I said.
I'll go with her,
Vida added quickly. Nico can trace the call.
You can't,
Chubbs told me gently.
You have a responsibility here.
So? I wanted to shout. I felt like tearing at my hair, my shirt, but I couldn't. I couldn't do any of those goddamn things because Cole had wrested that stupid promise out of me.
Take care of things, boss. Take care of things.
Kate and Harry wouldn't be here for another 2 days. I had to tell everyone.
He trusted you with this. He thought you could do it. You have to do this.
I had to. If Cole wasn't here, if Liam wasn't coming back, then I was in charge, and I had to tell the others. I had to stay here and keep it together.
Give me a minute,
I said. I only needed one. I walked briskly toward Kate's old quarters and shut the door behind me. I found the edge of the small bed in the darkness, the same one Liam and I had slept in the night before, and sat down hard. My hands reached along the coarse sheets until they found the soft fabric of the hooded sweater he'd left behind. I buried my face in the fabric, dragging in the scent of him, until finally I released it all in a silent, throat-burning scream.
"Why did you have to go in? How am I supposed to do this?"
Why hadn't I pushed back harder, knowing where the information had come from? And there was no answer. Just the terrible silence. Just the darkness pressing in.
Clancy. He'd known this would happen. Had banked on it. He'd shown Cole the camp, planted the images of it in his mind, knowing that Cole was the kind of person who wouldn't be able to let it go, seeing others like him treated so damn badly. He would obsess over it, stop thinking about the odds of an actual rescue. After all, how many times had he beaten the odds?
He never had a chance. The words blistered over my mind. I swayed with the force of the hot, singeing rush that ran from my temples to the base of my neck. My vision flashed, splitting the door in front of me into two, then four. I saw, rather than felt, my hand rise up and reach for the handle. The closer I got, the further back I seemed to be. Someone dragged me back and back and back. It was the last thing I remembered before the blurring dark turned to a gray static, washing over me, hooks and needles running through my veins. When I surfaced again, there was a cold gun in my hand, and it was pointed at Lillian Gray's head. 22.
Duane, stop it! Stop!
Ruby, wake up!
You can't do this. Stop. Ruby, stop.
I was floating underwater, deep enough where there was nothing but sweet, cool darkness. I didn't need to move. I couldn't speak. There was a gentle current, and it was taking me where I needed to go. It was urging me forward, and I went willingly, giving myself over to the feeling. This was better than the pain.
Look at me. Look at me, Ruby.
The voices were distorted by the waves, stretched into a long, continuous drone. The words filled the spaces between the heartbeats, the steady ba-dum, ba-dum, ba-dum in my ears. I didn't want them to find me here.
Jim? Hey, Jim.
I turned, looking for the source of the words, forcing my stiff muscles to move.
Take care of things, boss.
There was no one there. The black currents around me were swirling harder against my freezing skin. There was nothing there.
Jim. Ruby.
The air burned where it was trapped in my lungs. Where are you?
Rue, are you okay?
I thrashed against the water, stretching my arms up and up again to drag myself to the surface. Up. There was a light, a pinprick of it, growing larger, waiting.
Come on, darling, come on.
I pulled, dragged, clawed my way up.
She's going to do something. Stop her. Ruby!
I slammed back into my own mind. The thick, murky water drained around me as reality took shape. The static, dry smell of the computer lab, the glow of monitors reflecting against the nearby white wall, Nico's face, bloodless, hands up in front of him. My eyes shifted from the cold, heavy gun in my hand to the pale-haired woman on the floor, her arms up over her head protectively. I jerked, looking at Nico again, as the gun came down a fraction of an inch. My arm was on fire, aching like it had held the weight for hours. Comprehension dawned in his eyes, and I saw his stance relax, only to tense again as he shouted,
"Vi, no!"
1 minute I was vertical, the next I was on the ground, pain consuming every confused, disoriented